Representative Beth Cotula has joined us also, and Kyle, welcome.
Manager, if I might, is this area really all three of us in the House? Our districts kind of jointly intersect up there, and something that there's a road that comes out of Willow, and so Representative Massick's district is affected, and there's a
what
road.
What he's trying to tell you is the golf course will be named after Representative one of the three runs after Representative Massick, and one of the other buildings with Representative Coring.
Well, I'd just like to say we all have an equal interest in it.
Good. And it sounds to me like it's a great project. Go ahead, Kyle.
Commissioner Phillips, members of the commission, I thank the opportunity to give you this briefing on the Hatcher Pass Development Project. As you all might know or have some history of it, it's been around for a long time. The project originally started back in the mid-80s via a lease that was issued by DNR. Mitsui was the responsive bidder on that lease, and they had envisioned a $200 million development there. Their development was kind of geared around the Winter Olympics bid, and when the Winter Olympics failed, Mitsui terminated their interest in the lease. DNR then went back out, and the previous owner of Hatcher Pass Development, Fred Rogers, submitted a request for the proposal and was a selective bidder. Fred's vision for the area was a $25 million initial capital improvement on it. It consisted of a gondola from the base elevation all the way up to the top. And in subsequent reports, ADA reports, it became, it was based that it was non-economical. The $25 million was too much to support the initial phase of development based on the anticipated skiers that we'd receive. Davis Constructors purchased Hatcher Pass Development Corporation, and now Hatcher Pass Development Corporation is wholly owned by Alaskans. Our vision, we started off with our plan based on an ADA study that was commissioned on Fred Rogers' report. And the ADA study came back and said, okay, well, $25 million doesn't work, but what does work? What will work up there? And there was a couple key elements to that report. The first thing the report said is that we can anticipate 100,000 skier visits. And that 100,000 skier visits is based on a local population. They didn't feel like we would be able to attract destination skiers at this time because the competition abroad was too great. So they wanted to concentrate on 100,000 skier visits for our local skier visits. The other thing is that they said that you had to keep the capital improvement cost to around $9 million. Anything beyond that, the debt service, you couldn't pay for the project. We took those two things into consideration and tried to blend our plan on how we needed to make it happen. And what our plan consists of is a phased development. It's the only thing that makes economic sense. We feel that each phase has to be economically viable and to be able to support itself. The first phase is what we're calling is the ski area. And the ski area consists of two chairlifts, a base facility, snowmaking facility, and night lighting. All those elements we think are critical to provide an equivalent skier experience that exists on the slopes today. Our second phase, and I'll talk a little bit more about phase one a little bit, our second phase is infrastructure development. We're probably 5 miles away from the nearest utility, and a lot of infrastructure is needed to develop phase one and what we're calling our phase three development, which is our village. Our village development consists of hotels, convention center, some residential development, golf course, ice rinks. Our goal here on phase three is a winter destination spot, a year-round destination area. Truly, Alaska doesn't really have any winter destination spot that incorporates all the elements that this area has to offer. Phase four then, once our village is in operation, we feel as though we can attract some destination skiers. We feel as though at that time we've established some credibility. Our skier visits should increase, and by then we should be able to do phase four, which is more mountain improvements. And more mountain improvements would also open up more skiing terrain for the skiers. Getting more specific about phase one. Phase one consists of two chairlifts. The skiing terrain in phase one is about 1,000 acres. And the terrain generally consists of intermediate terrain at the lower end of the mountain with beginner terrain down by the Day Lodge area. And the more advanced intermediate and advanced skiing is up in the upper areas of the mountain. It lays out very well from a ski operation standpoint. Our goal here is to provide a similar experience, skier experience, to what's out there in the market right now. And we feel to do that, we need to have state-of-the-art chairlifts. And so what we're proposing here is a detachable chair, high-speed quad for this lower chairlift area, and a fixed-grip high-speed quad for this upper area. The high-speed quads will cut the chairlift time substantially. If this was a fixed grip system, it would take approximately 15 minutes to get from the base facility to the top. With a high-speed quad, it cuts that down to 5 minutes. And when you're talking about skier experience, comfort, those sort of things, especially with beginner and intermediate skiers, it's important to provide that comfort for them. The area has the sufficient snowfall at upper elevations, but at lower elevations, historically, it lacks the snowfall. The historic snow depth that down below is about 24 inches and is not sufficient for maintaining skiers. So in our phase one development, we have snow making for these lower elevations. It will also provide some insurance for those bad winter times when we don't have the snow and don't have the proper conditions. Lighting is also another critical element to our phase one development. With our short daylight hours, we need to have light to increase our hours of operation and to kind of gear towards, you know, an after work scenario, again gearing towards the local ski market. Phase one will have a day lodge facility, approximately about 15,000 square feet. We'll have a small snack shop, ski rentals, those sort of things in it. Phase two is really the infrastructure to support the village. Currently, the Hatcher Pass Road is not paved. It has some bad turns in it. So our immediate concern was, well, once we start putting 100,000 skiers on this road, we are concerned about the safety aspects of it. Currently, right now, that road is in the STIP. There is a they're in design right now for alignment of that road and paving of the section, which we think is a real benefit. Power is not to the leasehold. Gas is to the corner of the leasehold. We've been working with MEA to provide power to the base facility, and we believe we've come up with an agreement for them to supply that power to the base lodge facility. With water and sewer for phase one and for the whole area is a difficult. We're in the Little Susitna Valley here. The Little Sioux River is right here. It's very narrow at that location. We don't have much real estate as it relates to the river area. So wastewater is a real concern. We're looking for some long-term solution to the wastewater and water supply so it will serve phase one and for our village development. In the village development, I think Hatcher Pass is unique in the fact that it has a lot of winter recreation already existing there. It has cross-country skiing. It's been around for a long time up there. Snow machining is very big in the area. The Independence Mine is there, which can be elaborated on. We add cross-country skiing there. We really make a focus for, you know, really a winter place that everyone can enjoy. And I think Alaskans as well as visitors from outside can go to one spot and enjoy the Alaskan outdoors. I think the other thing that this area offers is the winter time is a good element of it, and not many places in Alaska offer that. But it also offers the year-round. The summer recreational opportunities in the area, again, are significant. A lot of activities can be catered around the village. The mine, over-the-top bus service, it has a lot to offer there. We had Scott Goldsmith do a study on the economic impact of the area, and the economic impact is significant. During construction, it creates 150 jobs, about $5 million in payroll. Winter operations, 138 jobs. Off-site impacts are around $1 million. Visitor spending around $5 million. And that's just for the phase one development. We haven't even gotten into the economic significance of the village and what that can build upon. We've made significant headroads since we acquired Hatcher Pass Development since 1997. We believe the project is further than it has ever been. And a couple milestones that have happened, one is of big importance is the road that's there. We see that as a major milestone. We've been working with the Mat-Su delegation in the Mat-Su Borough, and they've been a big supporter of the project. The land transfer, the Mat-Su Borough is now our leasee. They have acquired the management of this through DNR. And by doing that, we have a lease payment that is due on the leasehold of approximately $100,000 a year. And they have pledged to take that revenue stream to put it in the project to make it more viable. We see nothing but opportunity here, and we're getting very close. And I appreciate the support that we've had in the past and look for in the future. I guess kind of with that, I was going to turn it over to Mike Scott so he could talk to you a little bit about the borough.
Kyle, just a moment, please. Question, Representative Elker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kyle, let me ask you, you'd referenced the ADA report that was done. What year was that completed?
That report was done in 1994.
And currently in and around the Hatcher Pass area, who maintains the roads during the winter times? Is that state, DOT?
State, DOT.
Thank you.
Mike? Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, and thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to present the project and having this hearing this evening. You have, I believe, these handouts that have been given to you, and what we wanted to draw your attention to, of course, is the last two pages, the second to the last page, where we give the cost allocation analysis and breakdown. so you kind of see where this is and sort of bring home, I guess, the final point. The project in phase one is $13.3 million. $8 million of that is private money, and that's the Hatcher Pass Development Corporation. So we have that part of it secured. The other part of it, piece of this, is about $5.3 million in infrastructure costs, and that which, you know, the bankers and the other financial people have advised really is something that the public sector traditionally has dealt with, and that the private side should not be expected to pick up. And so we're working on that with several different agencies. And at this point, we believe that we're probably about halfway there. What we're looking for specifically from the state is about $1.2 million, as you see in the column titled State. And of that, $427,000 through the State Transportation Improvement Plan. And this particular project aspect has been nominated and we believe should be coming over to you in the STIP that DOT will be submitting for the capital project authorization soon. The balance, about $800,000, of course, we're looking for additional sums from the state. And I think the point that we wanted to make about the public infrastructure, that it is, in fact, a traditional role of government. But this $5.3 million will actually leverage, through all four phases, over $45 million. Now, ICER didn't do a economic significance report on the subsequent phases, but you can pretty well figure out, in doing your own tally, what a hotel, what a convention center, what a golf course, what a village will do, a series of shops and stores. It'll far exceed what we're doing simply in phase one. And at a time when we're seeing layoffs in the oil industry and we're seeing unemployment at the levels where we are, we think this is exactly the proper role of government. And in this case, together with the federal, state, and local agencies, we believe it's an outstanding opportunity for all of us to participate and assist in the development of the economy, and not only of the borough, but the state as a whole. Because, of course, having the second venue allows us as a state to market ourselves as a destination for visitors. It's pretty tough to do it just with one venue. You need at least two if we're truly going to capture that part of the market, in addition to serving, you know, Alaskans at the same time. So that essentially is where we are with the project. I think, as Mr. Randish has indicated, that this is certainly a scaled-down version of things that you've heard in the past. It is phased, it is incremental, and we believe it is very doable, and we're extremely close to it, and that we believe that we're probably in the best position that we've ever been to make this project a reality. And with your help, we're certain that we'll get there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Questions? Representative Hellcrow?
Madam Chair, Mike, this project would be within the Mat-Su borough boundary. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So would it would it be property taxes generated for the Mat-Su borough?
There would be, but there is a delay in that in terms of when you put them on the roll, first of all, and second of all, as we look at the value of that downstream, we would capture some additional property tax benefits to the borough, but we're probably looking out to some years, and nothing that we could take today that we could put into a revenue stream in order to debt finance something. We had our financial advisors look at this, and I think we've had 20-some people meet this summer up at the Motherlode to go over this project, bankers, financial people, and what have you. And I think that what you see on this second to last page is their collective wisdom and how we could proceed and do this in a sensible, reasonable manner not overload the debt side of it up front, and still stay within reason to make this thing go. But I think clearly that this particular, as a single investment, would be the second largest single investment in the borough, and we on the private side, and we obviously would have a very long-term interest in its continued success. So I hope that helps.
Just to follow up, one of the upsides of a project like this, you'll remember when they built the Alyeska Prince, I mean, there was so much property value, there was so much money put on the tax rolls in the Girdwood area that it actually lowered property taxes for everybody else. But just to follow up, could you please walk me through some of the acronyms that describe your funding sources here on the
sure.
last page?
At the very top, we have project and then category. HPDC, of course, is Atropass Development Corporation. EDA is Economic Development Administration. MSB is Mat-Su Borough. EPA is Environmental Protection Agency. State, of course, is State of Alaska. And USDA is the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
One thing, Representative Helker, you might not know about Mike. He's worked every one of these agencies for many, many years, so he certainly knows where any pot of money might be hiding.
Just follow up. Now, do you have commitments from these agencies for funding?
We're at various stages of development with our proposals with each of them.
Does the Atropass Development Corporation pay private property taxes at this point in time to the borough?
There is a value. They did pay the back taxes associated with it. I can't tell you. I think Kyle, and I want to speak for Kyle.
Yes, the back taxes were about $50,000 that we paid, and the yearly taxes, I believe, are around $25,000 a year, something like that.
And are you negotiating with the borough for a deferred tax or some kind of tax incentive with the borough as this project goes forward?
They are not, although we've just developed a strategic plan for the borough, and in there we've identified in the area of economic development as one of our five key strategies, some economic incentives, and I'm certain that that's something that will be considered as we move forward.
Further questions? On the Goldsmith study itself, going back to the first of your proposal, when he was discussing the total skier days and total revenue, those numbers or those figures that you have from him pretty much shows that it absolutely can pencil out as far as the revenue coming in.
Yeah, I think that was the there's some real value there. And maybe I should back up a little bit. You know, it's not every day that you run across a situation. You know, we've all been around this a long time in the state. We've heard a lot of pie in the sky proposals and big idea dreams and what have you. I think this project, there were a couple things that were significant to us as a borough that gave us some confidence. One is the ICER study. I think that does speak for itself. It does show that it can pencil. It does show that it can work. And I think it's credible. I think it's real. And I think it's something that we can rely on. The second thing is the ADA numbers, which had been, I think, in some respects, some years back, some folks sought to contest them because they really laid down the challenge about how it was you were going to proceed with this development. Well, the Atropass Development Corp folks, represented principally through Davis Constructors, Kyle and their company, accepted the ADA report on its face, did not seek to challenge it, and said that these are the numbers that we're going to work with in terms of assumptions that we make about the market. And I think the fact that they did that, we have the ICER report, we have, I think, from their bankers, I think, some realistic expectations about what this project can do. I think that gave us the confidence that it was something that we wanted to pursue, which is why then we then approached DNR about taking over the lease and trying to see if we could make this thing happen, since it has been around for, you know, 20-some years waiting to happen. So I think, yes, we can rely on the ICER numbers. I think we can rely on the ADA numbers, and I think we can rely on Hatcher Pass development. They have stepped forward every point along the way where we've asked them to make commitments. They've done so, and not just in words or deeds, but with money as well, with, you know, payment of back taxes and other commitments. So I think we've got a real opportunity here.
There's only one thing that I see in your whole plan that you've left out, and that is you don't have a landing strip involved in there somewhere. Sure, that'll probably be added somewhere down the line. Representative Helfro?
Thank you, Madam Chair, but they do have a putting green. Which
you're right.
Do you have a timeline, Mike?
Well, clearly the action out of this legislature is clearly important, and we're looking at fall of this year. We're hoping that we can do some surveying and minor trail grooming, and then assuming that by fall time the other pieces have come together, we then would be able to get together with the Hatcher Pass folks and put the final touches on it. And I think, as Mr. Randich has indicated, once that is all pulled together, we're looking at about 18 months from that point forward, because of the time it takes for them to acquire the high-speed detachable quad. So you're probably looking 18 months from this fall is our hope.
Just a follow-up, if I may, Madam Chair, and this might be a question for the mayor. Your priority list for capital improvement projects, the Hatcher Pass project, is that your number one priority, or is it pretty high on the list?
It's very high. We're working on a kind of a tandem basis. We have the Point McKenzie Port on the left-hand side of the valley. We have the Hatcher Pass ski development on the right-hand side. And I think you can see that if we get both of those operating, then the flow towards the middle will be substantial. But it is at the very top with that other development.
Yeah, to put that in perspective, it is the top priority where we're asking for any state funds.
Correct.
The port's not at, we're not asking for any state funds there. So the answer to your question is it is the top. I should also mention, too, that we had our first ever economic conference in the valley that led to our economic summit that we held this fall. And the conclusions out of the conference to the summit were that this project was the top priority and need in this area of economic development. And I think that we had all of the leaders from throughout the borough. We had 130, 150 some folks there. Our entire delegation was there. And I think that this project enjoys widespread support, widespread. We did some focus groups when we did our strategic plan. We found not only support, but enthusiastic support for this project. And I think that people recognize it for what it can do, very fundamental to the economy in a lot of different ways. The spinoffs from this, we're not even speaking about those because, people draw all sorts of pictures and conclusions. But for people in the valley, we really see this as something that would be tremendous, and we ask for your support.
Mike, maybe this is for Kyle instead of you, but would you please tell us who makes up the Hatcher Pass Development Corporation?
Currently, Davis Constructors owns 51% of Hatcher Pass Development, and Davis Constructors is owned by Greg Romack and myself. Harry Heyer with ECI Heyer, who is the principal architect of the project, is a shareholder of Hatcher Pass, along with Roger Head. And Roger Head is our ski area consultant for the area.
And what percentage of ownership do Heyer and Head have?
Terry Heyer
has 20% interest, and the same portion for Roger Head.
Okay. And who has the other
9%? That's at large.
At large?
Yeah.
Okay. We can buy into it, guys.
Thank you.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know who this question is to, but having Hatcher Pass be one of my favorite locations to travel to, I have had experience with that road. And I wanted to know exactly, I looked at the financial analysis here, the cost analysis, and I wanted to find out what part that plays. Is that factored into this? How does that part happen?
We can bring up two chairs there, too, so you guys don't have to back and forth.
The road is not in this analysis because it was already approved in the STIP last year, so we didn't see a need to put that in there. And it's actually money that DOT has, and then money that through parks, because they're going to do not only the road improvements but some wayside things along the way from milepost 7 to milepost 14, just past the motherlode. And this project is right in between milepost 7 and 14.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ogun.
I might add to that, that economic summit was not a small affair at all. I was virtually the entire business community from Talkeetna to Palmer beyond showed up, and there was unequivocally, there was no exaggeration on Mike's part on the support and the interest in getting this thing going. I think it's probably the, you know, the Map Valley suffers from a lack of good private sector development. I mean, your district is fortunate to have some good tax-paying private sector development in the form of fisheries and the refineries and urea plant and an LNG plant and those kind of things. And the Mat Su simply just doesn't have that. And so we would very much like to diversify our economy, and it's another reason why we're so supportive of it.
And outside of the borough too, there's been a lot of support and interest shown. The Associated General Contractors have lent their support to the project. Anchorage Economic Development Corporation has as well. They see the benefits of the two venues, and of course Anchorage being right at the crossroads of that activity. So I think a lot of people do recognize it truly as a state impact type project, and so we're making a very modest request here, and we think we'll get a lot of bang for our buck, and again we appreciate your help and support.
Well, one of the, going back to what Representative Ogun said, there is a great need throughout the whole state of Alaska for us putting projects like this in and spreading them out around the state of Alaska so that we can take the heavy concentrations of people in a very few areas and open up new areas. Certainly this should assist a little bit relieving some of the impact on at McKinley Village and McKinley Park area to bring it down to another area. Couple things that I'd just like to say. One of the things we're looking at long term in Alaska is for Alaska's transportation future is the light rail to the valley, and both not only Map Valley but Susitna Valley also. So this would that would certainly be a major impact assistance in this project, and I think we need to push forward on that too. What about you know, for every project that goes in anywhere, you're going to have naysayers and objectors, and those people are going to come in and say, you know, you can't destroy the environment, you can't use the land, wrecking everything. Have you had much of that yet on this project?
No, in fact, we have the environmental approvals in place, and I think that you know, the management plan that was established for this, it took many years, to develop and get public consensus on envisions exactly this. This is what it's about, and I think that you're right that it won't stop, you know, a few people from perhaps seeing it another way, but frankly, the vast majority of people really see this as a tremendous opportunity, you know, for the economy overall, and been around a lot of projects, a lot of different years, and this one has as much support and enthusiasm as any project I've ever seen, both locally and throughout the state for those that have been involved in it and aware of it. And I think the part that gets me, I think, to the point where I believe it's worthy of support, and I'll say this one last time, is that we're dealing with a very credible company with a long track record in Alaska, some 23 years. Davis Constructors is the third largest Alaskan-owned construction company in the state, built many of the things, tourism facilities that you see around, Anchorage, hotels and theaters and other things. But it's been the approach that people have taken the last year or two on this in keeping it modest, keeping it one step at a time, and not making a bunch of grandiose statements and grandiose plans, but rather working with what we have and doing the best with what we have. And I think that's a recipe for success. So
I think one thing that I meant to ask you last time, and I don't remember if I did, will you tie in tours or will you tie in any connection to the Independence Mine Park?
We are keenly interested in that. For those that may not know exactly, you have the diagram there that shows you in the handout. The Independence Mine, which is a state historic site, is, you can see in the top up here, is from this site, is just sort of around a couple turns and up, about 4 miles. It is very close. It, in fact, during the summer, will be a true enhancement to this as we look at a year-round. You know, the Hatcher Pass Resort development and the Independence Mine restoration, this is not a facility like a lot that you see at Denali, in McKinley Park, where they're open for 100 days out of the year and then they're pickled for the rest of the year. This is something that will be a year-round activity as it is now, and this will only even enhance it more. And so what we're talking about are year-round full-time jobs, year-round activities, and something that really that we can all benefit from throughout the year.
Just thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment, because you know this certainly is a very exciting project. And when you look at tourism distribution, people come into Anchorage. You can go south to Portage Glacier and in the Alaska ski area there. In the summertime, there's not a whole lot to do north unless you're going to Denali. And I think that this is, this is a great could be a great attraction. People go up and stay the weekend, play golf or hike or visit the mine. You know, it's just one reason to stay an extra day or two in our fair state.
We've been working with Westmark Hotels. We're currently doing all Marriott's work in Alaska. We've worked with Princess Hotels, so, you know, they are very interested in the project. They see the same benefits. They see, you know, an extra day being sent in the state, and they see great potential for activities out of the area to support, you know, their operations.
Great. Further questions? Thank you very, very much. It was a very good presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We wish you all the best. Oh, let me, before we finish.
There's no indication.
Okay. Okay. We have people listening in the valley, and I just didn't know if they wanted to tell.
I'd just like to thank you, Madam Chair, once again. Thank the committee. At the end of a long, arduous day, as I said, the mayor thanks you, the manager, and the people of the Massasoit Borough. Thank you very much for your time and your indulgence, and I really do hope that you can help us with this project, which means so much to us. So thank you.
Okay, well, it'll mean a lot to all of Alaska if we could get this one done. Representative Dyson?
Yeah, Mayor, what does help you mean? What do you want us to do?
Michael?
We have a request for $1.2 million. We believe about $400,000 of that will come through on the STIP, and so we're looking for an additional $800,000 in funding for this piece of the project.
The road.
Thank you.
I believe that will get us to the point of startup under the time frame that Mr. Scott and Mr. Rich had laid out, if we can put that piece into place.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's say about 15, 20 minutes and talk about our road issues. You each have a packet on your desk with the transportation corridor considerations. Our first meeting, I asked you all to give me some ideas and suggestions on what you'd like to see as far as road developments in the state. Here are several roads that would be excellent opportunities for us to be putting in a transportation corridor to a very, very feasible resource development area. Rather than going through these right now in committee, would you please take this and go through these, and at our next meeting, we are going to start sitting down and really making some decisions on road projects. But right before the meeting, Representative Sisna brought us a packet of materials also, and if you would like to discuss those.
I would be very, very happy to discuss those. One of the probably most economical ways to give all of Alaska an equal part in the destiny of the world markets, not just being a part of Alaska's economic infrastructure, but really the infrastructure of the world, is allowing Alaskans to have the infrastructure for inclusion in the internet. And if you look at the packet that I believe everyone has, you will discover that comparing the cost for internet infrastructure to, say, a highway or a road, and a road, as you see the cost per mile handout, comes up with a cost per mile. And on the second page, and for a relatively short road, as you can see, you pay a significant amount of money. For fractions of that, you can put into place the description of the costs of the infrastructure for the internet connection, and it would be more than, in some ways, internet, in that it would build in each community that is included the business part that goes with connection to the internet. It would provide for a local service provider, and that provides a source of revenue for each community. It allows students who are now plugged into a federal program and that has internet connections at their schools
learning on computers and then allowing them to plug those skills right into the community in which they live. So that unlike what has happened traditionally in Alaska, where we give training to people that they must leave where they live to use it, it allows people to learn at home and then to, and this is the part that I think is crucial, it allows each community in Alaska, each of which is terribly unique, each of which is in fact an incredible resource because of its uniqueness, to frame who they are and to market that worldwide. It really opens up whole huge markets for each place in Alaska that's connected. I think that of the costs that we could envision funding by the state, I think this is probably one of the cheapest, most cost-effective ways that we could change Alaska forever. Questions? Comments? Representative Roper.
Madam Chair, Representative Sisson, you indicate APUC restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't these satellite connections and these communities being serviced by local exchange carriers or long-distance carriers that have communication lines in those villages?
My understanding is that this is a federal program that made GCI put this the equipment into the schools, and the because GCI put them into schools and the federal government, as I understand it, requires that it only be used in the schools for non-commercial purposes. That limits what is there right now. And that's why we have to do something more. But GCI did it to 150 rural, they put in that connection to 150 rural schools for, as I recall, 6 million dollars, that's right, $6 million doesn't buy much of a road if you're talking an actual physical road, but $6 million would open up, and you're right, with some cooperation in Alaska to open up other parts of the regulations to allow communities to actually utilize this so that they can then have their service provider in their community, their ability to use the telephone to package the telephone lines and the different connections, and then the world.
Together with the service certificates, of, there's not real competition there per se. This is, again, I'm not sure what the motivations were or the costs would subsidize to GCI, but they may have done it to put their nose under the tent to get into those areas. So this, there's already long-distance lines in all probability in most of these areas. With the other costs, and I would assume there should be connections to ISP providers through the telephone circuits, but I'm not sure what the cost would be. Most of the communities certainly would be too small to have their own server. But I'm not sure exactly what the representative is suggesting here. We should subsidize this and compete with the private enterprise system. We already have a subsidy now, so a Bush telephone costs as much as $230 a month to keep the telephone line in that the U.S. taxpayers are paying through universal service charges, and the E-rate subsidy is a spin out of the Telecom Act of 96, which provides the monies through the federal universal service charges back to the schools to be able to provide this connection now. So that's already a charge on all users in the United States that's actually subsidizing that service, as I understand it. So.
My understanding, and this is just initial information. So the fact of the matter is that I think if there's interest, then we need to do a great deal more collection of information. But my understanding, and from personal knowledge, I know that there are many of the major regional centers that already have service providers in Nome and Barrow and communities like that. But this would be for all of Alaska, to make sure that we really are connected everywhere. We have problems all over Alaska with dire economic conditions in many wonderful places that need a boost. And this is really if we can make this happen, this is a relatively inexpensive way of giving a boost that then communities, they're already being trained. We're already having that option given to us. The workers are being trained as we speak.
Well, Mr. Madam Chair, if I might, I think the point is that we have a subsidized private providers in these areas already. I'm not sure I understand what the representative is suggesting, that the state should compete with the private sector. It's already got a federal and state subsidy. And you should be aware, of course, that your phone bill just went up because of the universal service charge just went on your phone bill last month, too. That helps provide that service that we're talking about. So I'm not sure what your point is here about.
Well, maybe we could do a little more research and looking into this, and maybe the two of you get together and
I might like suggest, Madam Chair, just that the good representative will learn as a member of the Labor Commerce Committee in the next few weeks, she'll start beginning the first blush of the APC and the regulatory utility nature of the state.
I don't envy you guys one bit. Now, but I do have a side question. Is that universal charge? Did it go,
Your phone bill last month. It's an Alaska universal service charge for telephone. Relatively small, but it was put in place by regulation of the APUC. But the Bush telephone rates here, actually every community in the state of Alaska, with the exception of Anchorage, I repeat, every community in the state of Alaska receives some type of federal subsidy for their local telephone service, including Juneau. And Fairbanks. So, and the subsidy used to be as much as $68 million.
What happened to the Anchorage legislators as they let that slip by?
Well, that was called the Telecom Act, the Telecommunication Act of 1996, which drew a line around it.
Yeah.
It's being phased out in certain sense.
Right.
But.
Representative Halker?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of follow up on what Representative Roepberg said to Representative Sista. I'm not quite sure I understand the thrust of this idea. Is it your intent that the state would go in and put these earth stations in, thus allowing small communities to hook up to the internet, and would that be it? We just put the substation, the earth station in, or would we go in and provide all the infrastructure for internet and then, you know, provide that on a monthly basis? I mean, how do you see this working?
Madam Chair, what I would really, Mr. Halker, through Madam Chair, if
all
I
right.
get all my terminology right, what I would really like to do is to meet with Representative Roepberg and investigate this further, if there's interest in my doing that, because I really would like to see what possibility there is to make sure that if in fact this is already moving in this direction, and maybe there's some incentive to give some kind of push or make sure that all the pieces are going together properly. That would be good. If it's already happening, then wonderful.
Yeah.
We can congratulate everyone. But it would be good to look at this possibility and make sure that we've at least investigated all the pieces.
Much I might say, I think I really appreciate the point that the representative is making about the interconnection and making sure we maximize the info bond and making availability of the bandwidth for the maximum number of people. I'm particularly excited about looking at the press release from the Gates Foundation and being reminded that I recently read an article in Fortune magazine about the individuals behind the day-to-day activities there and what the Gates Foundation is doing and making sure that we have the state library or whoever's perhaps dealing with that, we should maybe follow up and get behind that and put the old goose to Bill and Linda down there in Lake Washington to make sure that they're sending the money up this way too. I think that's real good.
And we could convince them to open satellite offices here in Alaska.
Well, I think Microsoft needs to spend a little more money up there and spend a little more time here, except fishing and doing touring boats. But anyway, no, I think that's really good. I think the one thing that is interesting too is making sure all the schools of the state are involved in the federal subsidies that were provided by the Telecom Act and making sure that's being implemented. I mean, that might be a real good project that we could look at to make sure that's being done. So I just want to try to understand what the good representative is doing. I think she's onto a good goal, which is how do we get there.
One of the things you might look at, too, the state of Nebraska is the only state in the union that is fully connected with teledelivery. Fully. I mean, because they have a lot of far-reaching, far-flung communities and little communities, they made this a goal of theirs about 6 or 7 years ago. It's just incredible what they've done. Good. Well, if you two will get together, and then the rest of you look at this road stuff again and make sure we get your input in on this.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
You had an article on Togo. Do you have a map or something on where that road?
We'll get it.
That'd be
they're supposed to be presenting us with a packet.
Okay, good.
Okay, and then our next meeting will be on April 28th, and it'll be the Tlingit Haida Central Council, and they want to talk to us about job partnerships in rural areas. And that day also we will have the Alaska Seafood Center will be here to do their presentation and their sampling of their products. So have a good meeting. Good meeting.
I'll be there
next time. Right. Okay, thank you. We are adjourned.